From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. The fighting in Ukraine is continuing today as the country tries to slow an invasion by Russian military forces that came by land, sea, and air. At this hour, delegations from Kyiv and Moscow are meeting in Belarus, but Ukrainian President Zelensky says he fears the talks will not result in peace. Meanwhile, here in Illinois, one of America's largest Ukrainian populations is watching in horror and mobilizing to support their friends and families in Europe. This weekend, there were rallies in Chicago and in Champaign-Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois.
Slava Ukraini!
Slava Ukraini!
Being Ukrainian, when I grew up, not many people knew what it was. And to see now that so many people do know what the country is and so many people are directly supporting it, it's very nice to see.
Even though I'm not embarrassed to be Russian and I'm proud of my culture, just it's betrayal. Like, we never support this government. We always speak up.
That was Daniel Brandis, the vice president of the Ukrainian Student Association, and Maria Kustovo, who is a Russian PhD student in Slavic studies at the U of I. Thank you to Farah Anderson of Illinois Public Media's student newsroom for that tape. We begin today, though, with Marta Farian. She's an attorney active in the Ukrainian-American community here in Illinois and is vice president of the Ukrainian Congress Committee of America Illinois Division. I spoke with her about an hour ago. Marta, welcome to the 21st. Thank you for taking the time to speak with us.
Glad to be here.
So I understand your parents are of Ukrainian heritage. Can you talk about your connections to Ukraine and the Ukrainian community in Illinois in particular?
Sure. I come from a Ukrainian family, but I was not born in Ukraine. I was actually born in Italy, but I came to the United States at the age of 14. And obviously, I finished all my studies, including a master's degree at Loyola University, and then law degree at Kent College of Law in Chicago. And I am involved in the Ukrainian community as vice president of the Ukrainian Congress Committee, Illinois Division. I'm also on the board of the National Congress of Ukrainians.
So can you say, are you in touch with people in Ukraine now, and what are you hearing from them?
Yeah, well, you know, in the last 30 years since independence, I've gone to Ukraine at least 50 times, probably more, twice a year at least, because of my role as president of Kyiv Mohyla Foundation of America, which is a nonprofit organization to assist the oldest university of Ukraine, the most progressive one, the one that actually, whose students were first in the Orange Revolution and then in the last Maidan Revolution. And they are very deeply involved in everything that's going on right now by volunteering to fight in the military, also because the students study many languages. The students of the university are now serving as translators to the many, many hundreds of journalists that are in Kyiv now and in Ukraine. So there is a lot going on, and our community here is very actively trying to help Ukraine, not only with donations, but also with approaching members of Congress and the State Department and the White House, asking for more military help, because we do appreciate all the sanctions and closing of banks and closing of Russian interests in the United States. However, we are trying to promote what Ukrainians are calling close the sky, close the sky. That's the call right now, because the Russians realized that they are not winning on the ground. They are surprised at the defenses of Ukraine that have been able to, fight off the Russian army. However, getting bombarded from the sky is another story. So we're asking the government of the United States, we're asking the president, President Biden, please send weapons to fight these missiles and to stop the missiles. We want to stop this attack from the sky.
I was going to ask what you meant exactly by closing the skies. The idea there of a no-fly zone that would be enforced by the American Air Force, or are you talking about more ground-based defenses then?
Well, at this point, we're talking about ground-based defensive weapons against missiles, and we are asking for more helicopters, for airplanes, but we are not asking for the American military to come to Ukraine to fight. As you can see, the last week, Ukrainian military forces are quite able to fight. And now, by the way, I see pictures and I'm being told that there are long lines of volunteers who are volunteering to fight in the military. So we're not asking for military forces from the United States, boots on the ground. We are asking for weapons to defend ourselves.
Yeah, I've seen the images of teachers and just everyday people lining up to collect these automatic weapons from the government. Can you, the young Ukrainians you're in touch with who are, you know, getting ready to fight or fighting themselves now, did you get the sense that they ever thought they would need to do this?
They were hoping for the best, but frankly, the war from Russia has been continuous for the last 8 years since the last revolution of 2014. When young people in the universities and everywhere joined to fight against the so-called green little men that were sent by Russia to fight people on the streets during the revolution. So the war has been on, and a sense of an imminent attack has been felt for a long time. However, because Ukraine really started progressing in its democratic and in its economy and strengthening its democracy, and people started freely traveling abroad, especially to Europe and frankly all over the world, I think that people started believing that there won't be another attack. But actually, the last at least 6 months, everyone has been pleading for more help and more military help from the United States. And even the day before the attack, there were experts or so-called experts saying that we can negotiate this, that Putin is a rational man and he's not going to invade. And Ukrainians were saying, no, you don't understand Putin and you don't understand the Russian mentality. This is not a business deal that you can negotiate.
What, in your view, is the best case outcome? Do you have a hope that Ukraine can stay independent from Russia?
Oh, Ukraine will stay independent from Russia because to the last man, they will fight. And The spirit of the entire nation came together. There's total unity in this. So we see that there isn't great enthusiasm among the Russian military forces, the boot on the ground. The Russian soldiers that were taken prisoner now are totally confused. They're saying that they didn't know where they were being taken. They're saying that they're cold. They're saying they don't have enough food. They're saying they don't have enough fuel. And so there are so many protests in Russia now against what is going on and against Putin that I am sure, and Ukrainians are absolutely sure, that Ukraine will remain independent. However, we need help. And Ukraine is, this is not just a war against Ukraine. This is a war against the West, against democracy. This is a war of Putin trying to keep his power in place, trying to control his own people, and trying to expand his influence toward the West. This is not going to end with Ukraine. I mean, he's got his eyes. He already announced that the next invasion is going to be to Estonia and Finland. So he's got his eyes set on Kaliningrad, the city that used to be held by the Tsars. And this man is not rational. He's very similar to Hitler, that he's unhinged. And so you can't really make a deal with an unhinged guy. But just today, there are talks going on, supposedly, to find a way to stop the vicious killing of civilians. I'm convinced that Putin is going to be tried one day for crimes against humanity. What's going on is unheard of. They are shooting at and they're killing kids in they shot and destroyed a children's a cancer hospital just 2 days ago. They are shooting at kindergartens. This is crimes against humanity, what they're doing.
Marta, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st and sharing your knowledge of what's happening in Ukraine.
Well, thank you. I realize that I'm very emotional while speaking about this, but it touches all of us personally.
Marta Farian is an attorney and vice president of the Ukrainian Congress Committee of America, Illinois Division. I spoke with her about an hour ago. We're back live now, Monday morning, Illinois time. And if you're just joining us, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're discussing the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the response from the Ukrainian community here in Illinois. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. That's 800-222-9455. And we're joined now by Anna Savchenko, an education reporter at NPR station WBEZ in Chicago. She's of Ukrainian Cypriot heritage, has family members in Ukraine, and has also been reporting on the response here in Illinois. Anna, thank you so much for joining us today.
Good morning.
Good morning. I understand your father is in Ukraine. Can you talk about what you're hearing from him?
Yeah, so my father was in Kyiv when the bombing started, when the war started, and he fled a day after that with my uncle and my aunt, and now they're in Lviv, which is a western city. They're terrified, they're scared, they're hiding in basements, they're following everything that's happening on the news. You know, they're trying to stay safe, and they're worried about everybody that they left behind, and they're worried about all our other family members that are scattered all over the country. So it is a hard time for everyone.
So I understand you were at the rally yesterday in Chicago. What was the environment like there?
So I wasn't actually at the rally. I was taking a reporting break, but I was at a couple of other rallies that were happening earlier in the week, and I must say, in the couple of days since, you know, the invasion first happened to the rally that we saw yesterday in a iconic Chicago neighborhood, it's been a 180 change. At the beginning, you know, there were a handful of people protesting, 20, 30. Yesterday, it was hundreds of people in the streets. And you know, just looking at all the other rallies that have been happening across the entire globe, I mean, we've gone from just a couple of people protesting in the streets of Chicago, you know, in early January against Russian aggression, when this was a taboo topic and not many people took the threat seriously, to the entire world coming out in support of Ukraine and against everything that President Putin is currently doing in Ukraine.
All right, we're going to have to take a break. We're going to continue this conversation with Anna Sevchenko. When we come back, we'll also be talking with another journalist in Illinois who's been looking at some of the businesses in Illinois and how they have ties to Ukraine and how what effects they might experience, plus a professor from Northern Illinois University who studies global conflict and security for his perspective on what's happening in Ukraine and the U.S. response to that. 800-222-9455 is the number if you want to join our conversation. We got a number of text messages from our listeners on this subject. We'll be sharing some of those when we come back. But if you want to join us now in real time, the number to call is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Coming up, we're going to continue, again, this conversation on the Russian invasion of Ukraine. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, at this hour, delegations from Kyiv and Moscow are meeting in Belarus, but President Zelensky says that he fears talks will not result in peace. More to come after a short break. You're listening to The 21st Show. Do stay with us. This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're beginning our program today talking about the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And this is a fast-moving story. I should update. We're going to air at 11:24 Monday morning, in case you're listening to one of our rebroadcasts. It's 7:24 in Kyiv in the evening, 8:24 in the evening in Moscow. Delegations from Ukraine and Russia met in Belarus, although those talks are said, the initial talks are said to have ended now. This is, again, a fast-moving story. So we are talking about the reaction here in Illinois. And there have been a number of rallies in the past week or so in Champaign-Urbana over the weekend. Also in Chicago's Ukrainian Village neighborhood. That was on Sunday. There were protests against the invasion. Among the speakers there was Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker.
My own family is from Kyiv, Ukraine. But whether you come from Ukraine, your family has descendants from Ukraine, or your family is from anywhere else in the world, today we are all Ukrainian. Today we stand in solidarity against Russian aggression. Today we stand in resolve against tyranny. Today we stand for democracy. And today we stand united for peace and freedom for Ukraine. To the heroes of Ukraine, Illinois is with you. Thank you.
We're speaking this hour with Anna Sevchenko, who is a reporter at radio station WBEZ, NPR station in Chicago. She's of Ukrainian Cypriot heritage, has family members in Ukraine. And in a moment, we're going to be hearing from a professor at Northern who studies global conflict and security. But for now, we're going to get an economic perspective on what's happening and how it might affect businesses back here in Illinois. We're joined now by Sarah Watson, who's a reporter at the Quad City Times. Sarah, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So two of Illinois' major companies, at least, have connections to Ukraine. You've been covering this, ADM and John Deere. What are you hearing from them about the situation over there and how it might affect them here?
Yeah, so right now, ADM and John Deere, they both have locations in Ukraine, and they've closed those locations. So ADM is they're headquartered in Chicago, and they have about 630 employees in Ukraine. ADM operates an oilseed crushing plant, a grain terminal, and several silos and a trading office in Kyiv. And so those are all closed temporarily. And so they have just said that they're keeping an eye on the situation and that top priority is safety of employees. And John Deere, which is headquartered in Moline here in the Quad Cities, they have a sales office in Ukraine, which is currently closed. And so Ukraine and Russia together produce about a quarter of the world's wheat. And so that also with economists that I spoke with, they said that that might raise grain prices in the long term if this conflict continues. Of course, that this is a very fluid situation that is updating constantly, and there's new sanctions being announced almost every day. So that could potentially, even though Midwest and the U.S. produces a lot of domestic grains, that could drive the wheat price, worldwide wheat prices up, which would affect could affect in the future grocery store and food prices in the future.
Yeah, right here in Illinois, we've already seen gas prices shoot up this weekend, but potentially food prices potentially on the increase because Ukraine is a, as you mentioned, a big exporter of grains.
Exactly. And yes, with oil prices, we saw on Thursday the oil reach over $100 a barrel, and since has come down, but and we see the administration is reluctant to impose sanctions on the energy sector, but that could, there could still be effects even without U.S. sanctions on the Russian energy sector on prices.
All right. Sarah Watson is a reporter at the Quad City Times. Sarah, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
I'd like to bring another voice into the conversation now. Dr. Ches Thurber is an assistant professor in the Department of Political Science at Northern Illinois University. He studies global conflict, security, and contentious politics. And his recent book, Between Mao and Gandhi, The Social Roots of Civil Resistance, examines dissident choices between violent and nonviolent strategies of resistance. Ches, welcome to the 21st.
Good to be with you.
So can you talk about how what is the U.S. response doing, this new round of sanctions aimed at Russian banks and oligarchs and high-tech sectors? How is that affecting the Russian economy? How will that affect the U.S. economy?
Yeah, we've seen from early on in this process, President Biden in the U.S. threatened that any response to Russia probably wouldn't involve, or almost certainly wouldn't involve, use of U.S. military force, but that there would be this very strong sanctions response. And kind of throughout the lead up, he was kind of ambiguous as to what exactly that would look like. But we've seen, especially over the weekend, perhaps what he meant by that all along. And it's been a coordinated effort between the United States and then especially the countries of Western Europe, the members of the EU, to impose a series of sanctions. And I think the most notable ones that we've seen over the weekend have focused on Russian banks and cutting off their access to what's known as the SWIFT system, that is a global communication system amongst banks that allows them to transfer their funds. And already we've seen a pretty striking consequence of this with a huge depreciation of the Russian currency by about 25% just over the past couple of days.
And we talked just a moment ago about some price spikes. Russia supplies oil and gas on a global scale. When Russia reinvaded Ukraine on Thursday, the price of crude oil went past $100 a barrel. Are there other price spikes consumers should expect in the coming weeks?
Yeah, I think the two big ones are in the energy and the food sectors, as you were just talking about with Sarah. Certainly, everyone's eyes are on energy, but I think the important thing to think about is that what we've seen so far is really just the market's trying to anticipate what might happen in the future. We're still going to see kind of the real consequences of what happens, and that can come in a number of ways. We might see actual damage to supply lines that go from Russia to Europe through Ukraine. We might see sanctions that actually target the Russian energy sector. Right now, there have been carve-outs in almost all of the sanctions that have been put in place to exclude the energy sector to try to protect the United States and protect Western Europe from huge gas price hikes. So that might change if Western sanctions policy changes. Or you might see Putin himself actually try to do something to cut off or disrupt flows to try to impose a cost on the United States and the West. And then again, with the food prices as well, I think the consequence of that will mostly be in terms of reduced supply lines, the inability to get these agricultural goods out of Russia or for countries to stop buying them from Russia.
All right. And we've been talking just in the last few minutes about the economic costs. Obviously, there's a huge, human cost to this. We're seeing reports of Ukrainian authorities are saying there was a rocket attack in one of the eastern cities, perhaps dozens of civilians killed there. I want to play some tape of Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, and this is on this question of the potential need for a military response, if not in Ukraine, then in some neighboring countries that are members of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, or NATO. Senator Durbin was in the region last week, spoke with reporters shortly after landing back in the U.S. on Thursday afternoon.
We know that this just isn't a matter of concern about Ukraine and the innocent people there who are the victims of Putin's aggression. The question now is, will he stop with Ukraine? We sincerely hope that he'll stop as soon as possible, but we have to be ready, which means we have to put our troops in the NATO ally countries that are most vulnerable. Those would include, of course, Poland, Lithuania, and the Baltic Republics. I met yesterday with American soldiers in Lithuania. We had lunch together. Three Illinois soldiers from towns around the state, Latham down in central Illinois, Montgomery out near Kane County, and Kankakee. These were our regularly active military soldiers who have been sent into Lithuania to prepare their troops for a possible battle that might be coming. We're not anticipating that this is going to happen immediately, but we've got to be ready because we're not sure where Putin will move next.
So this fits with a concern expressed by one of our listeners who sent us a text message saying, "It's horrifying and frightening. I think our coordinated response and the escalating sanctions are about all we can do without getting into a direct war with Russia. We do not want to be in a war with Russia. Too many nuclear weapons on both sides. Plus, Ukraine would be trampled by the two warring superpowers. When elephants fight, it's the ground that suffers," this listener said. Ches, how worried should we be about this conflict escalating and spreading?
Yeah, I think your listener is absolutely right. On the one hand, there's a big difference between a country being a member of the NATO alliance versus not. The countries that are, the United States and the other members of NATO, have made this commitment to use their militaries in defense of those countries. And certainly, I think part of Putin's calculus in invading Ukraine was the belief, correctly, I think, that the United States and NATO would not respond directly militarily to an invasion of Ukraine, whereas they probably would against an incursion against a NATO member. That said, as your first guest today pointed out, the way that Putin has been speaking in recent days, talking about reconstructing the Russian Empire, has made reference to territories that are within NATO countries. And so I think this is a cause for concern, and we've seen a strong response to this. I think this explains why we have seen many NATO countries be willing to ship arms to Ukraine, and this really surprising speech by the Chancellor of Germany over the weekend, expressing a commitment to make major increases to the size of the German military.
Anna Savchenko, I want to bring you back into the conversation now. Are you hearing from your family back in Ukraine or people here that there is more of a desire for more going beyond sanctions from the West, right? Shipping arms or even actually getting involved in the military conflict?
Yeah, I mean, there have been a lot of people, Ukrainian Americans here in Chicago and Ukrainians in Ukraine that are asking for more support, that are saying that just military aid is not enough. So there has been a definite push, you know, on their behalf for a stronger support, not just from the U.S., but from the European Union and other countries around the world. But at the same time, there is concern among Ukrainian Americans here on American soil that their American counterparts aren't as interested in, fully participating in a full-on war. I mean, we're seeing the casualties that are and the death toll rising every day. It's scary, and I understand why other people might be hesitant to support stronger American intervention.
I want to share another message we got from a listener. John wrote in to ask, what's the difference between the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the American invasion of Iraq in 2003? And he compares Putin's lies about Ukraine to those of the American government about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Then he says, Joe Biden voted for the criminal invasion of Iraq. Who is he to condemn Putin's criminal invasion of Ukraine? Chez, this is not the only time I've heard this, someone try to make this analogy. Can you respond to that?
Yeah, I think that's very much how Putin sees it as well. He's seen U.S. interventions in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Libya in 2011, and says, highlights U.S. hypocrisy. This says that this is something that the United States has done frequently, and that therefore it's hypocritical of the United States to level accusations or specifically to respond with sanctions when he does something similar in Ukraine. Now, I think other viewers of the situation might identify kind of some important differences, whether it is the nature of the government in Iraq versus that in Ukraine, the types of issues at stake in these conflicts. But the idea that the United States has at least engaged in wars that were illegal under international law, in the case of Iraq, and Putin is doing the same here, does have some merit.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be a little less diplomatic. I mean, Ukraine had a democratically elected government, not a, tyrant who won with 99% of the vote or whatever Saddam Hussein was claiming. Let me ask, Anna, you had a piece on Weekend Edition on NPR over the weekend talking about Ukrainian identity and Russian attempts to sort of wage a psychological war to erase that identity. Can you just talk briefly about what you covered there and the importance of the independent Ukrainian identity as separate from, it was part of the Soviet Union for a long time. Now it's a separate country, and why that's important to people?
Yeah, I mean, there are, I don't know, I think 40 million people, or the population of Ukraine is 40 million, or the number is somewhere there. There are hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians living outside of Ukraine's borders, including what people estimate to be more than 100,000 here in Chicago. And despite the fact that these people live outside of Ukraine's borders, they still identify as Ukrainian, just like I identify as Ukrainian, even though I grew up in Cyprus. So people maintain very strong ties to Ukraine, even if they're not living there. And they do, active things like learning Ukrainian as they grow up or participating in, church services or Sunday schools where they learn about Ukraine and Ukraine's history. And on the other hand, you have a very strong political power that is trying to push a narrative that tells you as an immigrant that this identity that you're holding onto as an immigrant living far away from your homeland isn't real, that it's made up, it's fictional, because Ukraine, this is what the Kremlin says, that Ukraine never existed outside of Russia's borders and frankly doesn't have its own history, that isn't a part of Russia. So you can understand how painful and frustrating that can be for any immigrant living in Chicago, New York, and in Cyprus to hear, because that's what people are holding on to right now, their love of their country, their love of freedom. Yeah. And when you have a strong movement like that, a political movement, power pushing out very specific propaganda to erase that, it can be extremely painful.
Anna Savchenka, thank you so much for being with us. Also, Chez Thurber. We have to leave it there.